We already in the 10th. Oh my goodness, April 10th already. Jeepers creepers. Time is sliding on by. Time slides on by. I just finished Through the Garden, A Love Story with Cats by Lorna Crozier. Certainly makes me think of how time slides on by. A lot of Patrick Lane is really mentioned in this, and Patrick Lane has been somebody who's sort of been in my life in various oblique ways, oblique but meaningful ways, since probably, I would say 99. Definitely before 1999. Yeah, 99, about 98 maybe. I started reading him. Poetics and Salvation. Started reading him in a prison cell. Kind of made me believe in poetry, made me believe in just writing. And he was one of the first Canadian writers I found who I could tolerate. After falling in love with literature, I'd been so kind of hopeful, I guess, at first. Hopeful that I was going to find the same spark of the great era of literature alive in the world. And it is. Oh, it is. It is. It's just not alive in the same way. I kind of wanted it to be alive in the same way. I was hoping there'd be this great society of Canadian poets that I could maybe even be a part of. This was long before the digital age. And Patrick Lane was, and then I kind of got into the Canadian poets and they just didn't do it for me. I didn't see anything, and what I observed is kind of like the Hemingway effect, as I call it, or the Beat effect, if you want to apply it to poetry. They both kind of are the same effect. The Hemingway effect and the Beat Generation effect are pretty much the same. Like maybe you could apply Hemingway's to prose, and I don't know. The prose world is different, but in poetry, the Beat Generation effect was what I found was just a lot of people slapping together anything, throwing it out there, as long as it was making it seem a little quirky, kind of like E.E. Cummings without talent in them for the most part, and just slapping it out there and throwing it out there. And there you go. That was my take on Canadian poetry. And then Patrick Lane, somewhere I met him. He was one of the ones I really enjoyed. In fact, one of the really few Canadian poets that I got into. Time slips away. Last night I finished a memoir by his wife, Lorna Crozier, who I would end up meeting in my own life after Patrick passed away, actually. Really. And so I'm thinking it's 2021 now, and I would have first met Patrick in 98. I would have first met him through his words in 98. I first saw him read at the library pub, the tavern in the library pub in 2000. Autumn 2001. I believe he was there. That could be cross-referenced, but it was sometime in autumn 2001. I was high on cough syrup. I was just meeting some old friends. Regina, I told Patrick that. Like, that's one thing I did tell Patrick Lane when he came in to kind of, years later, he came in to try to save me from spiraling around, I think. And I told him a bit of that background, that I saw him read in 2001. I was high on cough syrup and I saw his face. He was kind of stunned at that last part. But anyway, so yeah, 2001 then. And I've written a piece about this, which could never be published. Which could never be published. An anonymous piece about it. Bridget Keating would be furious if I published this way that Patrick Lane touched my life. The way that his poetry uplifted me. Bridget Keating would not have any of it. She'd be on the phone. She'd be writing articles. She'd be doing blog posts. But Patrick Lane and poetry and true poetry that first touched me in a prison cell. It deserves to be mentioned. As long as I mention Bridget Keating without venom and without being cruel, and just point out where I believe her error lies in her approach to poetry, I believe there's nothing wrong with doing that. There's nothing wrong with trying to move forward fairly judiciously. If we can't speak in person, this could be dialogue. So I've heard already what she has to say. I think I know roughly what she takes on it. But there's a different angle to poetry, and there's a different reason why poets should be allowed to publish their poetry, which is why I'm a little disappointed that George Eliot Clark didn't voice this a little bit stronger when the incident with Stephen Brown occurred. But Patrick, yeah, down the road, Patrick. The next time I saw Patrick Lane, after Patrick read in 2001, I believe, autumn at the Library Tavern in Toronto, I was in probably 2014, all across the country, on the other side of the country. In a cafe in Sydney, BC, I was standing there with my, at time, Jew buddy, Ryan H. Vigalter. I think he's still a Jew. We were in a cafe. Patrick Lane walks in. I got a little bit ridiculous. I made an announcement. Someone had pointed him out to me in town before. That's the only way I would have even recognized him, because I knew his words, you know, more than anything. But someone pointed him out to me, so I kind of recognized him. And then I made some announcement to the cafe, like, oh, everybody, one of the greatest poets. But it was a sincere announcement. Please, I'd like you to know that one of the greatest Canadian poets has just entered the cafe, or something stupid. And that made Patrick laugh. He thought it was ridiculous. He was great. And then he offered to buy us a coffee. And at first we refused because, I don't know, that wasn't the point of talking to Patrick Lane. The point of making that statement was to get him to buy me a coffee. And my friend also refused. But then Patrick said Patrick would have none of it. He was like, listen, I want to tell you something. When someone offers you a gift, you better take it, because that person might need to give the gift more than you need to take it. What are you supposed to say to that? And I have repeated that maybe 4 or 5 times since this day that Patrick told me. And I always say that Patrick said it. And that was such an interesting way. That was such a nice, I don't know. And then we just had a chat. He was behind us in line, service, of course. You know, I mean, it was Sydney and I wasn't working, so the service was slow. I don't know where that came from, but it's some truth. Anyway, we left. We had a little chat. We talked a few things. I mentioned on that occasion. I'm just trying to remember everything I said to him, because I feel like these are the stories. These are the oral culture. These are the stories that are passed on. And what I said to him, I told him that I was from Ryerson, which was true, that I had a degree in documentary film, which was true, and that I wanted to do a documentary on him. And he was like, what? He was listening. He was kind of interested. And then but he just didn't want to do one on him. But then I knew that, like, Al Purdy, I wanted to do one at the time on, like, Sydney, BC, being a kind of little tiny magnet, Sydney the Siren, with some poets and some noteworthy Canadian writers ended up, like Stephen Reed, Susan Musgrave, Lorna Crozier, Patrick Lane, and Al Purdy, maybe even Al Purdy. Like, to me, that always astonished me that Al Purdy also made it to Sydney. And he might have been, I don't know if he was, I don't know how they all ended up there, but anyway, so, but then I said I wanted to do it on Al, and Patrick was like, Al, I'd do it for Al. Yeah, sure, I'd do it for Al. And I'm like, well, can we go? Like, where did he used to go? So yeah, we could go. We can meet somewhere, blah, blah, blah. Where, you know, whatever, we could do it. I could talk about Al Purdy. So he was happy to talk about Al. He didn't want to do it about, he wasn't interested in doing it on himself. It was basically shot down. And maybe in my slightly conniving way, just wanting to do something, I had to appeal to his generosity as he had just appealed to mine by making me accept the coffee. But no, like, I really wanted to hear about Al Purdy with Patrick Lane. You know, I wanted him to, I wanted him to film it, but it would also be, it would have been an example of fourth cinema, which is like personal transformation. It would have been nice to hear about this. But anyway, so we left it at that. And he even gave me his email address. He gave me his email address. It was like plane@shaw.ca, I think. It was something like that. Anyway, he gave me his email address. And I did send him some. I did send him an email or something. I did send him. There are a couple emails that have passed back and forth between Patrick and I. I should go look and see what those say. That'd be interesting. But anyway, my life and myself tending to be kind of a, you know, kind of a F-U-C-K up, a walking shit show, hurricane turn away, hurricane anyway. That was never meant to be. That was not meant to be, that documentary. Now that Patrick has left this earth, is definitely not meant to be. Between that conversation and the next time I saw Patrick, I had gotten into some stupid, boozy altercation with the police. It had gone insane. It ended up like, I ended up in the hospital. I tried to escape from the hospital. I was being chased around the hospital by police. I made it outside. There was a wall of police cars. I tried to get away. They tasered me. It was crazy. That happened after, you know, quite on the heels of the conversation with Patrick. And I was just so forlorn at that time. I was so down. I was so upset that what drinking was doing to my life over and over again. I was so upset at my inability to quit drinking. The way it just kept swirling around in my life. And I would still say she's out there swirling like a swallow in a barn. So I was so forlorn and I didn't know what to do. So for the first time in my life, my boss at the time was a AA member. So I approached him with the idea and he took me to a meeting. He took me to the big meeting in town at noon one day. And that was a tremulous experience for me. Crazy. That was a crazy experience for me. A waitress I knew, Spencer, very well-developed, beautiful woman. Her name's no longer Spencer anymore, so I can call her that. She happened to be in this meeting. Last time I'd seen her was in the liquor store. Someone had said to her, "Oh, you're done your shift, are you?" She's like, she goes, "What? Done my shift? I'm just starting my shift." She's buying her alcohol, about to go in to start her work as a waitress, gonna have a little buzz on. Ah, she's great. And I said my thing. There were some people I recognized around in that room. There were some people, doctors, lawyers, whatnot. And then in the back, my heart jumped when I saw Patrick Lane sitting there in the corner of the room, the AA room. Patrick Lane. This I didn't know. I don't think I knew this. If I did, it wasn't something I was thinking about. It was certainly not anything I expected. It was my very first AA meeting, and seeing Patrick Lane thereafter, like a man with, he's some history. He's just some kind of, he was a pretty big deal to me personally, on a personal level, just the way our lives had crossed, and to see him in that meeting was crazy. And I just felt like overpowered with even like Spencer hugging me and rubbing her right breast against my back, my left shoulder. Seeing that and having the breast rubbed on my shoulder were the two things that really made me believe that I was in the right place. And that was a little step with Patrick. And so then, as time went on, I would get to know Patrick a little bit. Patrick came, you know, we had this ice cream shop. I told you that one time Patrick came in. I was having a family crisis because of, guess what? Back on the booze after over 1 year and 8 months. No booze. And then somehow booze. And then again, crisis. And family crisis. Someone in my family runs off and, unfortunately, to my great humiliation, breaks the code, because I had informed this person that Patrick was in the meetings and that it was so inspiring to me that Patrick was there. And then during some family conflict, he comes in just uncharacteristically and starts, like, he'd come in a few times. I'd see him every now and then. He'd come in uncharacteristically on this occasion and just started just alone, just when I was alone, and started talking. And he seemed uncomfortable. Like, it was just kind of weird. He was uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable. And he's like, he was trying to intervene. Like, now that when I look back on it, it was so touching that Patrick went out of his way to do that, like, with me. And I don't know. And then I was like, Patrick, do you know my story? Do you know anything about me? He's like, I think so, a little bit, but I don't know what he knew. I don't know what he knew. And anyway, we had sort of a weird, unresolved moment. It was a very respectful moment, but I do feel like I kind of dug my heels in a little. And that he respected it, and he just left, and and then I just kept seeing him and seeing him. I stopped going to the AA meetings. I stopped going to the AA meetings, and I just kept seeing Patrick in town, various things. I was a waiter in town after the ice cream shop fiasco fell apart. I was forced to scramble. I moved onto a boat as a way to be able to afford. It was the cheapest way to live in that town. And I started working as a waiter, thank God, in a wonderful restaurant and with wonderful people for the most part. And I'm just realizing how many people I've fallen out with in the past year. I've fallen out with so many people in the past year, including everyone I've mentioned in this story. But what does that tell you? Anyway, I don't know what that tells me. Yeah, so I'd see him at the restaurant. I'd see him. He'd come in. I'm just thinking about the passage of time and how Patrick, I'd sit there. I'd wait on he and Lorna. I do remember they liked to have, one thing I remember about their order was they liked to have, also remember Lorna used to drink wine there with him, and I liked that. I thought that was a good sign. I liked that. To me, that was a wonderful sign. It showed me that they were both being their own people still, and they weren't getting in each other's way, and that Patrick was not letting Lorna, was not for Patrick's own decision, was not coming to cramp Lorna's life. I thought that was a beautiful sign. She used to drink her white wine, and they used to order, what was it called? Guy Lan. They liked having Guy Lamb, but they liked to get specific about their Guy Lan. They wanted less stem, more leaf. Less stem, more leaf. And they used to make me go into the kitchen and, like, try to make sure, because according to their past experience with the restaurant I worked, the Guy Lan used to come out with more, there's not a lot of leaf on the Guy Lan. And the cook at this restaurant and the kitchen environment was the most stressful place on earth. I'm like, you're going to, I don't know. I'm like, they don't really speak English. She's like, and Lorna's like, I think you'd probably be able to convey to them that you'd like the Guy Lan to have more leaf than stem though, right? And I'm like, I could probably convey that to them somehow. Anyway, that was it. That was it. That was where they came in. They came in, fairly often to that restaurant, always, usually with, I think always, almost always, not always, sometimes just the two of them. With guests, and that was very cool. I remember showing the other waiters, getting them to Google up. I was trying to tell them who these people were, making them, these Chinese people had no interest, didn't know anything. They just weren't into, they didn't, this Canadian can lit was not part of their lives, put it that way. Can lit was not part of their lives. And I made them, like, look up on their phones who Patrick and Lorna were. That was fun. And I also, the other person I made them look up one time was when, this was at a separate occasion, when Stephen Reed came into the restaurant. with Barry, Stephen and Barry, good old Stephen Reed. So I believe the restaurant was the last time I laid eyes on Patrick. And it would have been, I think it was actually fairly, it couldn't have been that far into his illness. Because in February 2019, there was the snowstorm and Patrick was alive. I know he passed away on, I believe it was March 7th, 2017. So, but I believe the last time I saw him alive was in August 2016 or maybe sometime 2016. Because after that, yeah, it would have been in sometime around then. Because then I had to go and get a job somewhere else. Huh. And as I'd written in a previous poem, something he had changed at that point. I hadn't seen him for a while. The illness was on. I didn't know much. I think I had heard that he was ill. And I saw him and I just felt like, within the year he would be gone. And that's what I've said. And I've said in a poem that I wrote the other day that how that knowledge was grotesque inside me. I was talking about Patrick and I was talking about Mr. Beads, another kind of friend, another local Sydney person who I had a lot of time for, who passed away recently as well. And I wrote in a poem to Mr. Beads, I said, because I've had the same feeling when last time I saw Rob, which was not too long before I left the West for good, hopefully. I don't know. Not long before I left the West for good. Was I had the same feeling when I saw both of them. When I walked away, I felt that it just entered my mind that I don't think they were going to make it for the year. And for Patrick, it was just such a, you know, I mean, Rob was trying to go that way with his anyway, but with Patrick, I guess he was such a strong person, such a strong, bright, predictably unpredictable person in a way, maybe. Like, you never, there were many shades of Patrick. One of the great things about going to those meetings, because Patrick was a regular attendee, both at the 7 a.m. one that I attended and at the noon one that I attended. I saw a lot of Patrick over that year of my sobriety. And I did get to know him. I saw him waking up early to start these meetings. I saw him rubbing sleep from his eyes, but just there and just, the thing is, the strange thing is, I did see him right at the end. He was like 24 years sober or something, a long amount of years sober before he passed away. And when I saw him in Toronto for the first time at the poetry reading, he was drinking at that stage. That was right before he quit. I just find all these little synchronicities so interesting. And now I've just finished reading Through the Garden, a love story with cats. That's like, it's good because it's just been exactly what I've needed right now. I've just needed to I think I've needed to have the Netflix off to kind of sit and feel something profound. And no book could make me want to do that more than this one at this stage. And all the way through, it was just, I mean, just like just reading about, like personally for me, having now met Lorna, having talked about Patrick with her, I've really appreciated Patrick Lane for a long time in many different ways. It started with his poetry too, which is strange. And it started once again with reading it, an incarcerated man, incarcerated 21 or 22 year old man, which I would have been at the time, reading Patrick Lane, or 23 maybe, reading Patrick Lane in prison. That's where it started. And it just kind of came up through there. And now Patrick's gone. Now Patrick's gone, and the passage of time, springtime is arriving. I'm working in my own garden now. I'm out there. I don't know what I'm doing. But before I started this podcast, I was out looking at the outdoor garden that I'm making, and I see what I think might be arugula coming. It might be weeds. I don't know. I know I'll never get as into the garden as Patrick was, but I can definitely see the therapy of it and the therapy of just working on your own property, whether it's gardening or like making something, just making your place cooler. That's, I think, a very poetic way to live. Enjoying the world beyond, but continually making your own place cooler. I've got my little Castro puppy dog here, lying on a blanket given to me by a woman who broke my heart. And this little puppy dog is about to break my heart. But hopefully not for a while yet. Hopefully not for a while yet, but reading about Basho being put down, about Basho, period. I never met Basho, but I met the other one, Poe. I was warned not to try to pick it up, and I did not try to pick it up. But I felt it. I felt it showed some kind of... Zorna said it showed some kind of interest or something in me. Anyway, that's... Welcome to Solitary Confinement in the Digital Age, another podcast, a work of personal transformation. My mandatory personal therapy session out here in solitary confinement, Nova Scotia. Today, the fires of addiction, they are not quelled, not entirely, but there are just so many things I have to do today. I'm putting together a cement mixer. I'm on step 7 out of 9 today, and I've been doing one step a day, just kind of like a 12-step program, although this is a 9-step cement mixing assembly program, which is going to be hopefully just as beneficial. I've got a barn that wants to collapse into the tide that's now underneath its posts. But I've piled a bunch of rocks up there. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to try to make cement. I'm going to figure this out myself. My mother says I remind her of a pioneer, and I remind myself of a pioneer because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm a blessed man, joyful. I need to repent. I need to realign myself. I need to give my head a shake. I need to keep trying. The nipple will dribble the harder you try. The tide comes in, the tide goes away. I'm so blessed to have this place. I bought it for $29,500. It's now paid for. I can afford to spend some time. I don't have to be running around working some stupid job. I can sit here and just try these things. I got to leak my dining room / library ceiling is leaking. Everything's going up. I've got so much to do, put it that way. I'm blessed here. I'm trying to get a ritual. I'm trying to do a little bit of yoga every day, read some spiritual readings. I'm trying to do this podcast every day. And get my things done, do my writing. I'm on a deadline today. I'm fairly penniless today until Tuesday as well, which might actually be the ultimate salvation. But anyhow, my stomach's growling. I'm going to put on the raisin toast. It's a mandatory 30 minutes in solitary confinement and digital age. It's a mandatory 30-minute podcast. So now's the time of day where we just run out the clock. I must admit, I helped myself to the local food pantry last night. At first, as I did so, I felt like I didn't need to, but when I got home, I felt like I did need to. So I grabbed some baby clams and some pineapple juice and spaghetti and chicken noodle sauce. And I'm going to have some Cajun clams today. I'm going to make that, maybe have that as my lunch. Yes, I'll have that as my lunch. And then I've got a little bit of a real estate article to write, which is nice. And I've got some DIY things to do. Do it yourself. That's the theme of that'll be the theme of the podcast, the Couchcast, till the end of the summer. DIY. Then we'll see what happens then. Anyway, thanks for listening. I love you. And